Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Do you know anyone in need of a hip replacement? What about a knee? Someone with rheumatoid arthritis? In other words, someone in chronic pain. Have you ever wondered why it takes so long to see an orthopedic surgeon, and then why it takes so long to get a date for surgery? How come someone in a car accident or an on-the-job injury gets into surgery within hours, and you wait and wait and wait? Makes you feel like a second-class medical citizen, doesn't it? Orthopedic surgeons have been asking the same questions, and they've broken down the wait time into what they call wait one and wait two. Wait one time is the time between when your physician refers you to see an orthopedic surgeon and when you get to see that surgeon. Wait two time is the space between your consultation for surgery and the actual surgery. To talk about the system in BC, we sat down with orthopedic surgeon Dr. Kevin Wing to have a conversation that matters.
Dr. Kevin Wing, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Good morning.
You are an orthopedic surgeon.
That's correct.
Do people really know what orthopedic surgeons do? And why don't we start there with an explanation of it, and then let's talk about the practice of orthopedic surgery, plus the other aspects of your job that you deliver. Why it seems to be there's a bottleneck around getting treatment that people so desperately need, especially when they're dealing with chronic pain.
Well, orthopedic surgeon fundamentally is all about caring for the musculoskeletal system. And all orthopedics, well, orthopedics has surgery attached to it. It turns out that probably 75% of the people we see don't need surgery, but they do need our expertise to understand what's happening with their body. The bones and the joints that make you move, that make everything you do happen physically is kind of in our main domain of what we study many years for. Somebody like myself, 15, 16 years of post-high school education.
15 or 16 years.
Yeah. By the time the smoke clears for me, I went on to subspecialize, and that was the 16th year in foot and ankle pathology. But before I did that, I did all the core stuff with respect to hip and knee and shoulder and elbow. And in fact, when people break things and come into my emergency, I still treat those conditions. Many orthopedic surgeons can specialize in younger age groups, pediatric population, and then all different parts of the adult body are also areas that either some surgeons do a little bit of everything, other surgeons have an area of interest and focus in that area of interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about understanding as we age, as we have injuries, how things can affect us. And that's a big part of what we do is help people understand how their bodies are changing and how to best deal with those changes. And sometimes it's dramatic with surgery, and in many cases it's just counseling them on the kind of therapies, the kind of interventions, the kind of proactive things they can do to manage their bodies.
So there's this tendency to think, I think, for people who are outside of the world in which you live in, that, oh yeah, you deal with the bones in my body. But it's not just that. It's also the tendons, the ligaments, the muscles, everything. Is that why it takes so long to become an orthopedic surgeon? Because it's so complex?
Yeah, I think that's a good explanation, right? You really have to be a master of anatomy first. Then you have to spend a great deal of time understanding how different pathologies present themselves. And as you say, like for me as a foot and ankle expert, there's, you know, numerous major bones, major tendons, major joints, all of which can be affected differently, both by either chronic wear and tear or by a sudden slip or fall. There's a lot that goes into understanding how the body changes, understanding what the CT scan or the MRI or the ultrasound means into relation to the pathology, and then understanding which strategies best yield improvement.
So I think one thing that people don't understand is that there's sort of acute trauma, I guess, that would happen from an accident of some nature that shatters a bone or whatever, and then there's chronic deterioration. Why is it that the system seems to pay more attention to immediately dealing with the acute problem rather than the chronic problem? And yet the chronic problem is the one that can be incredibly debilitating. Well, yeah. I guess both can be.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you've really hit the nail on the head in that our specialty in Canada is unique, in that we're very busy with people pouring into emergency with urgent problems. You know, dramatic things like bones sticking out of skins and stuff like that, or broken hips and elderly that require immediate attention, you know, where they count the hours. Conversely, we're equally as busy with people who are having problems with knee pain, shoulder pain, that kind of sneaks up on them. And you know, I guess the single biggest thing about it in Canada is our system hasn't undergone any meaningful reform in a very long time, or perhaps never. Our system isn't incentivized to care for those less dramatic cases, and so there's this systematic bias against those patients becoming or getting treated. And it's really just about managing the budget. And the frustrating thing for me as an orthopedic surgeon is that, you know, it's tax time, everybody paid their taxes. The last number I heard in BC was close to 40% of our tax dollar was going into healthcare expenditure. And yet that less urgent, that less dramatic patient, that patient who's just having shoulder pain with their squash game, the system ranks that patient very lowly and simply says it's acceptable for them to wait years for care. And it's one thing if it's mild shoulder pain, I suppose. It's another thing when there's pain so bad that you can't sleep at night, or pain so bad that you can't walk a block. And yet the system doesn't recognize those patients. And so we know every year in British Columbia, thousands of those patients wait years for care.
So I talked to Dr. Alistair Younger, and he was telling me that and population size of, let's say, 1 million people in Scotland, they do twice as many orthopedic procedures in a year than we do. What are they doing there that we're not doing? And then as a result, winding up with these long waiting lists of people going, but I'm in pain.
And we're very unique by the way we fund our system and by the way the system is administrator. There are no other Western countries that operate a system like ours. And with respect to access to care, especially for MSK patients, for orthopedic patients, we consistently rank 12th or 13th in the world. You can't find another example. It comes back to the way the system's designed and the reluctance of our politicians, and perhaps maybe the lack of awareness in the population that our Canadian healthcare system with respect to orthopedic patients is not excellent. Mm-hmm. And amongst comparator countries, we finished last or dead, you know, or second to last. It's a real problem.
You talk about MSK patients as almost being outside of the mix of everybody who gets access to healthcare, because there are those who would say, well, no, it's quite good. I went to the hospital, I had a problem, they dealt with me right away. But what is it about this MSK patient that somehow seems to be okay to make them wait? Is it age-related?
I think it's the nature of the problem. It's not dramatic. Many people stoically live in pain, and so they're still able to function to some degree. And also everybody recognizes that it's kind of in some ways, a simple problem. Oh, it just hurts when you walk. No, it's not cancer. No, you're not going to die from a heart attack. It's okay to prioritize you as low priority. And then in a system that has a lot of bureaucracy, in a system that doesn't account for the fact that they're ignoring you, mm-hmm. You end up waiting a very long time.
But it's not just as simple as it hurts when it walks. Wrenched my knee the other day, and it's not that it's not going to go away, but walking has been incredibly uncomfortable, and moving around, my level of productivity, my ability to contribute even to my own little company, goes down. Do we not pay a price as a society if we're saying to a group of people, oh yeah, you're in pain when you do these things, but somehow that's okay?
Yeah, we know what you're saying is true. You know, we know with scientific certainty that that's true. It just comes back to the way the system's administrated, and that it's repetitively convenient for the system to ignore those concerns. Mm-hmm. Ironically, in British Columbia, WorkSafe BC doesn't ignore those concerns. If you're injured at work, they understand that it costs them more to have one of their workers off longer. So they go to great lengths to expedite the care of their injured workers. The same is not true for the MSP system and the government. They see that with too many competing needs, it's convenient to say that we insure everybody, we care for everybody, but this year is not your turn and next year doesn't look so good either.
But it must become just gut-wrenching for somebody who says, okay, I'm willing to wait, and they go into that process and they wait 18, 20, 24 months. They get to the day of their surgery, they're waiting to go in, and then all of a sudden the surgery gets canceled because this is not an uncommon occurrence. What happens to that person then, and what's the impact on them?
Yeah, cancellations are a concern, and I think many hospitals do their very best to avoid those, but that's also the reason why they tend to ration the number of cases they do. It gives them wiggle room to try to get the cases that they've booked done without canceling them. For orthopedics, it's a big deal, and especially as a lower extremity surgeon, and if you mix in the elderly population, as you say, you know, people have to make very large arrangements and large accommodations in their life to take the time to try to get better from a debilitating condition. If you're in the working age, you have to change your working responsibilities. If you have dependent children, dependent parents, you have to change care responsibilities for them. I think our system tries to minimize cancellations, but it's a real cost. And patients who get canceled know the inconvenience associated with that.
So I know that within the arena of orthopedic surgery, there's a concept of wait one time. What is that?
Yeah, in our system, orthopedic surgeons are fully gate kept in the sense of you can't come and see me, or at least I can't build a system if you come and see me, unless you're referred to me by I'm another medical doctor. And the reason for that is to try to avoid unnecessary consultations, to try to avoid in a publicly funded system the idea that you stub your toe, you think, oh, just on the way to work, I'll stop off and see my orthopedic surgeon for what might be arguably an unnecessary medical visit. In our system, it's not like that. You have to see your family doctor, and we all know there are issues with people having trouble finding family doctors and people getting into their family doctors, but nonetheless, if you want to come and see me, you see your family doctor, you get a referral to me, and then you go on my wait list for consultation.
On your wait list?
Yeah, typically that's the way it goes, and that's historically the way it's been run. And that's the beginning of your wait. Well, it's actually the second part of your wait. You might have waited to see your family doctor,
right.
Or you might have even waited because you're a good Canadian before you even went to complain to your family doctor. You might have suffered for some period of time.
Because you didn't want
to tax
the system. Right.
But I become aware of you when you're referred to me. For many orthopedic surgeons in the province, we know with scientific fact that patients are waiting 6 months to a year to see the orthopedic surgeon, whatever the nature of their complaint is. It's a really long time. Once you see the orthopedic surgeon, there can sometimes be delays if advanced imaging like MRIs or something are needed. And then ultimately, you and the surgeon jointly decide that surgery might be to your benefit. You sign a consent. And that starts your wait for surgery, which unfortunately in British Columbia can still be another 6 months to a year.
So that's is that wait two time then?
That's the wait two time. And conveniently, for many years, the government has only chosen to report not the wait two time, not the wait one time. They've chosen to report only when they receive the booking card in their hospital.
And what does that mean?
Well, that's just the piece of paper that gets sent to the hospital to notify the hospital that if I was assigned, June 1st as an OR day, that on June 1st, I'm going to take you to the operating room and fix up your ankle. And it'll have the information that's required with respect to how long the surgery will be, what special equipment I need, and it organizes everything. And typically, I'll send in, or my office will send in, the whole day's slate. And so that's done fairly close to the time of surgery, because the final order of the cases, the mix of equipment, and all those things are set. And there's a fair bit of planning that goes into that, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, on that booking card that I send the hospital is the date you were referred to me from your family doctor, the date you saw me in patient consultation, the date you signed your consent for surgery, and then ultimately your date of surgery. And for reasons that aren't clear to me, the Ministry of Health only reports the date that the booking card actually hit their doors. So currently, you can look on the website.
So it looks like you've got a very short wait time.
Right now, on their website, the wait time to see me is 2.9 weeks to have surgery.
And how many of your patients actually experience that 2.9 weeks?
Only the ones that break their leg and have the bone sticking out and come in through emergency, though they get treated quite quickly. Otherwise, everybody waits, you know, a minimum of 9 months to see me in consultation, and many patients wait 3, 4, 5 more months for surgery, which means that my average wait time for surgery is around 50 weeks. It varies from period to period, depending on exactly what's happening. And that's an average of 50 weeks.
That's a year.
That's a year. And so some patients are waiting shorter, some patients are waiting longer. You know, we know at our hospital that hundreds of patients each year are waiting longer than a year for their surgery, and that's from the that's actually just the wait to time, the decision time. So the waits are very long, and the system is struggling to respond to those long waits.
So what are orthopedic surgeons doing to try and at least reduce that wait one time? Because it's my understanding that as far as the wait to time is concerned, you don't have much control over that. You've got to tap into the resource, which is the hospital, and whether or not the patient needs recovery time. Is there a recovery bed that's going to be available? But what are you doing to reduce wait one times? Because that can be, you know, concerning for somebody.
For me, there's two big things we're trying to do. One is actually just raise awareness that access is a very real issue. Orthopedic surgeons in the province currently fund a system that aggregates wait time data in real time, so that we're able to display and report the actual waits for consultation, actual waits for surgery that people are experiencing. Just like if you were to show up at a restaurant or somewhere and find out the wait is 2 hours, you know, it doesn't help if their website says it's 5 minutes. When you show up there and you find it's 2 hours, you'd maybe like to know what the actual real waits are. On the wait one time, many orthopedic surgeons in the province are trying to become more collaborative. Both between orthopedic specialists, but also incorporating other advanced care practitioners, whether that be a physiotherapist, a nurse practitioner, or a family doctor who has a special interest in musculoskeletal problems, to try to organize patients so that they can see the right person at the right time. And part of this is about getting the information in the hands of the patient so they understand what's happening to them. We talked earlier about how much training I did become an orthopedic surgeon. The average family doctor might only have a few weeks of musculoskeletal training in medical school. If they have an interest in the musculoskeletal system, they may have acquired significant additional skills, but some are experts in other areas of medicine. Plus, as a general practitioner, they have many things they have to account for. And so currently in our system, there's this tremendous gulf between where I sit as a specialist with 5-6 years of advanced training in musculoskeletal pathology and the gatekeeper, or the person who's referring it, who has just a little bit of training in musculoskeletal pathology. So the orthopedic surgeons are trying to work on that and trying to mitigate that chasm between those two things to help the patients understand what's happening with their body quicker, and then provide reassurance that when they need to see the surgeon, they will see the surgeon. The question is can you build a team of individuals so that some of those patients who are currently waiting to see the orthopedic surgeon can see somebody else with the right amount of training, with the right amount of expertise, who can help them understand what's going on with their shoulder or their knee or their foot. So a variety of clinics in British Columbia, orthopedic surgeon-led clinics, are trying to come together and be more collaborative. This is this concept of centralized intake, of having kind of a master intake list for that area, with the surgeons working collaboratively with other MSK experts to, again, try to organize the chaos that is access to MSK consultation right now. The one thing we need in BC is a new look at how we do it. We don't just need tweaking. We don't just need a little bit of, oh, well, if we just did 5% better on these metrics, or we just added half a person over here, suddenly the problem would go away. The problem is significant. The problem needs significant reform. And, you know, this isn't a public-private debate. This is a debate about that in the public system, a significant percentage of patients are disenfranchised. And we need some recognition of that. We need some willingness to try innovative things, to fund things differently, to operationalize things different. It's not just do a little bit better in the same old way. It's like really take a hard look at how the system operates and a willingness to do things differently. And in fairness, the surgeons also have to be able to do that too. To say, well, okay, traditionally we've practiced a certain way, you know, and maybe we, like you say, need to be more collaborative and need to do things differently. And I think for many physicians, that comes back to the idea that we're completely willing to put the patient first and the patient's experience first. It's really frustrating for me when I see bureaucracy within the healthcare regions and bureaucracy in the Ministry of Health that say that kind of statement and then produce data or produce policy that couldn't be more against that.
What's the number one thing that you would like somebody to take away from having watched this conversation in their understanding about where we're at in the delivery of orthopedic care in BC?
I think the number one thing is that many parts of our system are excellent. Orthopedics has a proud tradition. We provide excellent care for many patients. But there needs to be a willingness to examine the 10%, the 15%, the 20% of patients. And that's thousands of British Columbians every year who wait far too long for consultation and surgery. And that there's physical harm, there's mental harm, there's financial suffering. And in a country like Canada, we should and can do better.
What can we as individuals do to help change that? Because clearly you're trying on your end of the equation, but we're all part of that as well.
Yeah, and I think that the average person needs to know that they need to let people in their hospitals, they need to let people in their health regions, and they need to let people in the Ministry of Health, even the new health minister, yet to be determined, that they find it unacceptable. That they find it unacceptable that they can live in Canada, that they can pay taxes in Canada, and when it's their turn to access orthopedic care in a non-urgent fashion, they shouldn't be told that it's years. They should be told that's fine, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, you know, wait to see the specialist, maybe another small wait to see to have your surgery. They shouldn't be told that it's years.
Thank you very much, and I wish you all the best in trying to make us better and pain-free.
Thank you.